You are listening to a sermon by Henry Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, May 5th, 2013, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
A few people have talked to me during the week and wondered what I was going to speak about. I have sort of refused to elaborate extensively. I have said to some, well, if you remember the comment that Kevin Hebert made in response time last Sunday, you'll have some idea. No one could remember.
Pick me.
And one person actually said, I don't even remember who spoke. Well, what Kevin said struck Tina and I as a bit surprising, because he was speaking about my sermon, and he didn't know that. Kevin talked about a computer app, whatever that is, called Seesaw, that allows other people to engage in your life. And the example he gave was somebody who had problems with groundhogs, I think it was, and so on. So Kevin sent me some information about that, and I pursued that. And it was very similar to the idea that initiated this talk. One of the key differences was Kevin got his information off the internet. I got mine off the printed page. I still like to hold the magazine in my hands. The story is from the Atlantic magazine, the April issue, and it describes Mike Merrill, who lives in Portland, as a man who took his life public. I almost didn't read the article because the title put me off. It said something about finding the I in IPO, and I didn't know what an IPO was. But I read it anyways. Mike is 35 years old. He works for a software company. I think he's a CEO. And he spends a lot of his time on computers at work and at home and in the evenings. And in the evenings, he pursues creative and artistic ideas. And in 2008, he came up with the dream of starting a one-man stock exchange. And IPO is initial public offering. That's something that happens when you put stocks on the market. And he offered investors shares at $1 a share. And that would give investors a chance to comment on his artistic and creative extracurricular activities. They would get a say in which ideas and avenues he could pursue. The wisdom of the crowd, as Kevin put it. The first 1,300 shares were bought by his friends. And shares have traded anywhere from $1 to $8. They're now around, I think, $8. He has 160 shareholders. And he made it clear that shareholders will not get dividends, and likely will never make any money, or any profit at least. His motto is, buy shares and vote on my life. Now, the idea of seeking input on personal decisions did not occur to him until he disclosed to his shareholders that he moved in with his girlfriend. And one shareholder complained, this decision could impact his creative output. It constituted a unilateral management decision, and it put investors' capital at risk. Where was the accountability, the shareholder asked. So Mike got thinking, and he started putting more personal matters before his shareholders. They vetoed him getting a vasectomy by 55%. They had him register as a Republican voter. Now, Merrill thinks that the input that he has received in his personal life is important. We all have friends who date the wrong person, he says. And he calls it a Ask the Crowd model. And so on his so-called romance project, his shareholders helped him develop an 8-page relationship contract with his partner. It included everything from flossing to TV viewing. Now, he maintains that shareholders holding him accountable has genuinely improved his life. Now, by now you're likely wondering what any of this has to do with the scripture passages that were read. Well, I hope to get there. In Acts 16, Paul's dream, his vision about going to Macedonia or Greece is described. Dreams and visions are important. And the Bible has a lot of accounts about dreams and visions. Jacob had a dream when God spoke to him about the future of the Israelites. And Jacob called the place Bethel. And Frida had a painting that used to be in here that depicted that experience. Solomon had a dream. God said he should ask for whatever he wanted. And he asked for wisdom. The Magi were told in a dream to change their travel plans. Peter had a dream about God's message being for everyone, not just the Jews. Paul had a dream we read about, and it changed his travel plans. The 38-year-old man lying at the pool dreamed of being healed. Mike Merrill had a dream about taking his life public. A group of people had the vision and dream to establish this place, and they did. So these dreams and visions are important. And they can be exciting, they can be scary, they're often life-changing, and they can push us into uncertain territory. Now, the Acts passage describes Paul following his vision and visiting Macedonia, or Greece as it would be known today. And he goes down to the river to join a prayer meeting. We took our place with the women who had gathered there, and it's somewhat surprising for Paul to be joining a women's group, but he did. Presumably there was no synagogue there. And Lydia, a dealer in expensive textiles, listens to Paul. She believes. She and her household are baptized. And with a surge of hospitality, she invites Paul, Silas, and possibly Timothy, if he was there, to her home. She extended hospitality. She used her network of new connections to broaden her relationships. She didn't have Mike Merrill's technology, but she developed and fostered relationships. She invested in their lives. The man at the pool, we don't know how long he was there, but it was a long time. He had been an invalid for 38 years, and there was this belief that an angel would come, stir the water, and the first person into the water would be healed. And you can imagine the scramble, the mad scramble, be the first to get into the water. This fellow had no one to put him into the pool, so he always got left behind. Well, Jesus is in Jerusalem for a feast, and he goes to the pool. He chooses this one fellow from all the blind, crippled, and paralyzed, and he asks this man a simple question. Do you want to get well? Now, that's a surprising question. Of course he wants to get well. That's why he's lying there hoping to get into the water. And yet Jesus asks him that question, do you want to be healed? Well, the reality is that some people thrive on their illness and don't particularly want to get well, despite protestations to the contrary. We have a friend who tells us that his mother enjoyed ill health for many years. Some people need their illnesses. So the question from Jesus, do you want to get well, do you want to be healed, is very insightful. I once had a client who wanted help, but I got absolutely nowhere with him, so I went to see a psychiatrist. We talked for a while, and the shrink said, well, this guy doesn't want to change, and his job is to make you fail. He's thriving on his problems. Well, pain sometimes gives people an identity. Well, the fellow at the pool explains that he has no one to put him into the pool. There's no one to help him. No family, no friends are available. If he had access to the internet, like Mike Merrill, he might have been able to arrange for some help. And maybe that's why Jesus decided to help him. He had no one else to help him, and Jesus tells him simply to get up and walk. And this gets him into trouble with the religious leaders. The man carries his mat on the Sabbath, not unlike the story Jim Newdorf told last Sunday about the man gathering firewood on the Sabbath. This fellow worked on the Sabbath. Well, Jesus didn't always follow the proper religious protocols, and that got him into a lot of difficulty with the religious hierarchy. Now, what does any of this have to do with our church? We're a geographically diverse congregation. We have people from the North Shore to White Rock to Coquitlam attending. Many of us drive past half a dozen churches on our way here. And when people ask me about this church, I say, well, or our church activities, I say, well, we don't have many activities. Sunday morning is pretty much it, partly because of the geographic diversity of our members, and also we have limited access to this building. So when I read the article about Mike Merrill, I thought, well, I wonder if a church could do something like that. Could we form a series of small groups where people are connected by the internet? Now, participating in such a network assumes that we're willing to get into each other's lives at a level beyond checking whether I flossed this morning. I didn't. I don't know if I want you to have a vote on my life and the decisions I have to make. But I know there are always life decisions where the input and observations of others would be helpful. Rosie already carries on quite an extensive ministry on the internet. But sometimes we get emails or announcements where someone is seeking accommodation or needs something. Well, is it possible to expand this and make it more effective? The man at the Bethesda pool had no one to help him. There was no network of people available. Lydia expanded her network by inviting people to her home. Mike Merrill simply took his life public, and you can find all the information about him on the internet. And he says having people hold him accountable has genuinely improved his life. I think this touches on an area fundamental to the church as a caring community. We once attended a church where one of the commitments was to have that the people would have a concern for the total well-being of one another. A very demanding concept. Well, perhaps technology has provided us with a way to do that. By attending this church, we are, by our commitment, investing in each other's lives. Do we want to use the technology to develop this further?